Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have Michael Crump. Michael is a Microsoft MVP, an iNeta community champion, and, like me, a XAML evangelist for Telerik. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing, Jesse?
I'm doing great. And full disclosure, Michael and I are both XAML evangelists for Telerik. But actually, Michael, I have you on today to talk more about Windows 8.
Excellent. I'm very happy to be here. I'm glad that actually that we are now co-workers. I never thought that I would get to be working with Jesse on a day-to-day basis, but it is wonderful for us working together, and I'm very happy that you have me on your show.
Well, that about wraps things up. Thank you for joining us. All right. So you were at the Rocky Mountain Trifecta talking about 10 things a Silverlight developer should know when building a Metro application. So what are the 10 things I should know?
Yeah, so last weekend, I actually went down to Denver, Colorado, my first time in Denver, and I gave this talk, and just like you had just mentioned, 10 things a Silverlight developer should know when building a Metro application. So I'm going to start with, people had asked me when I first got there, you know, well, how did you come up with the 10 things that this, you know, a Silverlight developer should know? And I was like, well, I have always been in the Silverlight space for about the last couple of years. I really started with Silverlight 2. I did a tiny bit of Silverlight 1, but mainly Silverlight 2. So what I started doing when Windows 8 came out was I started trying to port my Silverlight applications over to Windows 8 XAML C#. And when I started porting those over, I started hitting a couple of different roadblocks. And I just decided, well, you know what? If I'm hitting all of these roadblocks, all of my other Silverlight developers are hitting the same roadblock. So I'm going to put this in a PowerPoint presentation and share this information with everybody else. So to begin with, what I started talking about was, number one, was really starting with just the fundamentals. So most people, they already know, you know, Silverlight, it's hosted inside of a web browser via plugin, but they may not know too much about Metro, and Metro, of course, running on top of WinRT inside of Windows 8. And some of the things that, you know, questions that always came up to me was, you know, if I have a Silverlight application, you know, can I run it on my Windows 8 box? And you and I both know, obviously, the answer is yes. The same Silverlight applications that you were working with run in Windows 8, but only in the desktop mode. And then, of course, the Metro applications on the other flip side can only run inside Windows 8. The next, I guess, fundamental thing that I think you should need to know is that when you're developing a Silverlight application, you know, you're usually using C# or VB and XAML to build these applications. Well, in the Metro world, you have the option between using C#, VB, C++, and XAML, or obviously HTML and JavaScript. Well, also in Silverlight, you could use XNA, at least partially in Silverlight 5. And then we found out that in Metro, XNA was not available at all. But of course, you could use DirectX. So the first point in my talk was basically describing some of these differences and things that, you know, we're used to in Silverlight, but we're not used to just yet in Metro. And just the way that we were developing applications has changed just a little bit because, you know, primarily in Silverlight, we were using a mouse and a keyboard for our input. And then, of course, on Metro, we both know, and I know you're working on a book and things, that Metro is built primarily for touch input. So that was kind of my fundamentals. The second point that I discussed in my talk was the actual application lifecycle. So in a Silverlight application, we're used to a couple of different things happening. A user requests a web page. We have an HTML page, which has an object tag that loads the plugin. The plugin downloads a ZAP file, starts reading the manifest. An application class is instantiated. Our startup events. And then finally, our page has been rendered. Well, after that, that is pretty much the life cycle. So at the end of that, if the user wants to kill the application, then they simply hit the X and on their browser, which closes the app, and the app's gone. It's completely gone.
Right. One key thing about Windows 8 is that while you can close applications, by and large, you don't.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and what we're, you know, what we're trying to shift our mind around is that in Metro, we have a user that launches an application. So we have a running application. And so from there, a user may decide, hey, let's go ahead and let's check the latest sports score. Let's go look at some news. So the application then turns into this suspended application. So if they keep on and they keep on adding more applications, we may get to a low memory point. And at that point, the application becomes a terminated application. So Windows is actually managing the terminated state versus in Silverlight, where the user, you know, closes out of the browser or closes out of the tab, which actually kills the application.
Right, which is great for the end user. They don't have to manage their applications, although I think that's going to take a bit of re-education. But, of course, it does put a bit more of a burden on the programmer.
Yeah, I believe so, because you're starting now to think about all these different suspended states and, of course, saving your state where when the user resumes your application, that it returns back exactly where it left off, where they have a great user experience.
Very much like Windows Phone.
Exactly. And with Windows Phone, several of the apps that I've built, when I return back to them, especially like in my, I have a treadmill assistant app, when I return back to it, all of the user's data is exactly right there where they left off. So now that that's carrying over into Windows 8 Metro, I think is just an excellent thing.
Great. So you talked to folks about the fundamentals and the application lifecycle. And if my notes are right, the next thing that you talked about was namespaces.
Yeah, so namespaces is a biggie to me when I started porting Silverlight applications. So one application that I decided to port was Scott Guthrie's famous Dig Silverlight 2 application. And I ported it over to Metro, obviously. But I did that. This was an article. It's actually in Visual Studio Magazine. I'll give you that link. We can put it in the show notes. But one of the things that I found when I was just basically copying and pasting code and seeing what works and what doesn't. You know, may not be the best way to test an application or to start porting, but that was what I was doing. So for XML namespaces, the key thing to remember here is that you should only declare the namespace, never the assembly, and you should be using a using statement instead of CLR namespace. Now, I know this is kind of hard to wrap around in a podcast when normally I would have, you know, some slides. So I'm just going to kind of describe this a little slightly different. So in Silverlight, let's pretend like we're declaring a dig namespace. We would be using something like XML, NS, and then our colon, the word dig, and then equals, and then starting with a quote, CLR dash namespace. Colon, dig sample. And then, of course, it closes out. Instead of using that CLR dash namespace, you just simply replace that with using. So, of course, it would just be turned into using colon dig sample. The other thing is that if you declare an assembly, so say, for example, you have a XML NS of ad. So you're using a namespace of Microsoft.advertising.mobile.ui. And then maybe you have an assembly in a Silverlight application. In Metro, don't worry about using that assembly. So you could just use your using Microsoft.advertising.winrt.ui. So that's part of the XML namespaces. But there's also another thing to talk about regarding namespaces. And that is actually the code namespaces. So the majority of changes that I found when I was porting over was the UI-related classes. So, for example, we all know and love our system.windows. Instead of everything being our system.windows, now you have to think of windows.ui.xaml. So I do one or two of these just as a quick reference for, you know, your listeners, is that, you know, maybe a system .windows.controls would now be something like a windows.ui.xaml.controls. So keep that in mind. Anytime you see system.windows, think about windows.ui.xaml. And Visual Studio will scream and yell if you, if you try to use system.windows when it's not allowed.
All right, that's great. Let me move you over to talking about asynchronicity and using the async keyword in Windows 8 applications, and also the wait keyword and the task keyword. And let's talk about all of that for a few moments.
Sure. So one of the things that talking about the async keyword is that I learned this by making web requests. So we all know and love web client. So web client has been removed from WinRT. Now you have to use HTTP client. Well, all of the web requests now, they make use of this async, await, and a task. So with asynchronous programming, I always put it in the things in the most basic explanation I can think of. So whenever you're trying to wrap your head around this whole asynchronous programming, think this. Think async is going to avoid the bottleneck of your application that's being executed line by line. So basically, your program is going to continue to execute. So with the async keyword, this enables the await keyword that's inside of that method. And only thing you really have to remember here, or in my opinion anyway, is that for the await operator, it's applied to a task to basically suspend the execution of the method until the task is complete. So, just a task is basically just this asynchronous operation that can return a value. So, if you were creating a new, for example, the web request, where in the past you were using web client and Silverlight, now if you were using Metro, you may use something like public async void, whatever the name of your method is. And then when you get down to maybe your call, you would, or getting your response, you would maybe have maybe like a var response equals new HTTP response message. But then you would use response equals await space client.getAsync. And then, of course, you could pass in your URI. And what this is going to allow is the fast and fluid that we keep hearing about with Metro applications. So I know that was quick and I know that was fast, but that is my, in a nutshell, of async and await.
Let me hone in a little bit on await, because this, in terms of cleaner and more easily understood code, I think is very dramatic. In the past, in Silverlight programming, when we were doing asynchronous programming, we would have callback methods.
Yes.
So method one would be going along, and then you'd hit an async call, and you'd pass it the name of method two. And then when it returned, it would call method two, and you'd be in the middle of method two, and you might make another async call and pass it the name of method three. And you ended up having code that was a little bit difficult to follow, especially if there were multiple async calls in any given method, because as soon as the async happened, it would fall through and continue in the method it was in, and then the continuation for after the async finished was in the callback. Now with the await, that's really quite different.
Yeah, absolutely. And even some of the callbacks that we were using in Silverlight 4 and Silverlight 5, such as async result, all of those are actually going to need to be rewritten. And there was a blog post that I created a while back on using async with Silverlight 5, and it was basically, you know, showing the same thing that you're talking about, was that it was an OData data feed. I do a lot of work on OData, and I was pulling in a Netflix catalog without using async, and my browser locked up. So with using async, my browser is still fully functional and the user can still click and they can still move around. And when that code is finished, of course, the rest of the data is going to be populated on my list box in that sample.
Right. Excellent. Okay. And just to bring that to a close, what the await keyword does in terms of the callback is essentially it takes the rest of your method and wraps it into a callback method invisible to you. So your
exactly.
method now looks like make an asynchronous call and await for it, and then make the next call and await for it, and then make the next call and await for it, and you can have it very straight inline code, and yet you're getting all the benefits of those callbacks.
Exactly.
So that you're mentioning the way you were using it brings me to files and isolated storage. How are they different, or what do you have to watch out for if you're a Silverlight programmer?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that I've mentioned is that with isolated storage in Silverlight and with Metro, you can still, you know, pretty much do all of that. It's a little different how you're calling isolated storage, but the same rules kind of apply there. So, but one of the things that starts getting a little bit more trickier is when we're trying to just write to different places. Yeah, so in order for a Metro application to write to, say, the documents folder, you have to set it in really two places. Inside of capabilities, there is a checkbox that you can check for documents. And then, of course, you have to set up the declarations. And there's only a few things you have to set up in the declarations. You have to give it the .txt extension if you're writing a text file. And then you have to give it a name of, say, text. So that is the difference if you don't want to bug your user. If you don't mind a dialog box, you know, popping up, then of course you can use a file picker. And so one of the things to keep in mind is that if you were using full trust, say in Silverlight 5, you could write to something like the temp folder without even prompting the user. And in a Metro application, no way can you write to the temp folder without some sort of file picker dialog being presented and the user selecting that. And that is because with a Metro application, the files, of course, are limited to this sandbox that it has created for your specific application.
Great. Now, you have in your outline for navigation the startling statement, no more URI.
Yeah, so one of the things I know all Silverlight developers are kind of used to, and even phone developers, in Silverlight you would use something like this.navigationService.navigate, and then new URI, and then you would pass it like a page1.xaml, and then, of course, whatever the URI kind is, as in relative, absolute, or relative, or absolute. So in a Metro application, you don't have to do that anymore, thankfully. Now all you have to do is, if you were navigating to a page and you have a frame, you could do a this.frame.navigate, and then you would use a type of. And with after the type of, you could pass in the page name. So you no longer have to think in URI when navigating to a page in a Metro application.
Okay. One of the meaty changes that comes with programming for Windows 8 is the controls. Can you talk a little bit about what new controls there are?
Yes. So with the controls, the first thing that I started doing, of course, working at Telerik, you know, I'm going to be looking at, you know, what controls made it, which ones didn't. We can see that there's a lot of controls that didn't make it, such as the calendar, child window, data grid. And, you know, we hear over and over, you can't have a demo without a data grid. Data pager, there's a couple of other controls that didn't make it as well, but there were some new controls that were added, and that if you're building a Win8 application, you're going to be using these more than likely. One of them is a list view. So this is basically going to display a collection as a stack of items. This is commonly used in a snapped application. The next control to talk about is the grid view.
Let me just interrupt you for one second. For those who are not familiar, there are three ways that your application can be displayed. Full screen, snapped, which means that you have roughly one third of the screen. And I never remember what the third one is called, where it's the remainder after the snapped part.
Yeah, so the snapped part is 320 pixels. And one other thing to note here is the screen resolution. So the minimum screen resolution is 1024 by 768. But if you want to have a snapped application, then you're going to have to bump up to the 1368 by 768 resolution. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that is the resolution, because you have 320 pixels for the snapped side and then the 1024 by 768 for the other side that we both don't know the name of.
There you go. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No problem. Controls. No problem. So we had list view, where, you know, a stack of items, a grid view. We're thinking here more of a grid-based layout and a grouping of items. You'll see the grid view if you select either of the templates. There's three main templates that ships with the VS11. You'll see those in the latter two. Semantic zoom. So the old name for this was jump viewer. So with this, you're basically going to zoom in and out of a collection. So you could be, you know, switching between two different types of controls. The flip view is another control. So this is like an items control that displays one item at a time. So a great example of this is if you're using the USA Today application and you're displaying pictures, or you look at the 10 pictures of the day, they're using a flip view there to navigate through pictures. Another great improvement Silverlight developers will love is that the media player now has built-in playback buttons. You know, before you would drop a media player or media element onto your screen, and you would have no buttons at the end. So you would start building those in, or, you know, putting that functionality in yourself. Now with the media player, it has it. There's a progress ring that's a progress indicator. There's other stuff like an application bar. There's a carousel panel, a rich text block, and there's even a wrap grid for wrapping items.
Great summary of some of the new controls. You talk about how animations are baked into WinRT. What do you mean by baked in?
Yeah, so with animations in Silverlight, we had animations easings. But the thing was that nobody was really, I didn't see too many people using these. So when you're thinking of Silverlight animations, the animation that I saw in most applications was the child window, because it already had baked in, I guess, animations for zooming in and for zooming back out. So with Metro, and there's a whole animation library that's just absolutely baked into the SDK. So if you want to do things like a theme transition, so your animate loading, unloading, or changing locations of elements on the themes, they have you covered there. There's theme animations. So these theme animations, they're built to run on user interaction, and basically it's up to you to trigger them. And you can use these animations that are baked in. They're great. Remember, we keep going back to, we want the look and feel of how Windows 8 is to be, you know, in our Metro applications as well. So Microsoft has you covered, because, you know, they want your application to blend in with the operating system. And if you don't like the animations, you know, that comes built in, you can always create custom animations as well. I know I've tried to create some in the past using Blend, for Silverlight, and I got as far as a bouncing ball. And that was pretty much it. So, but if you have somebody that understands and knows how to create beautiful looking animations your users will love, then go for it. If you don't, if you're like me, then use the animation library, because it takes all the guesswork out of it.
Great. Let's talk a little bit about charms. What are charms? And more importantly, what's the functionality that charms bring to your application?
Yeah, so with charms, the first thing that I thought of was when I was building, you know, Silverlight applications, things such as searching and sharing, you know, they weren't built into the operating system. And so if I wanted to search or to share, well, I had to bake in, I had to put all of that functionality into my Silverlight application by myself. So with charms, they're basically Windows 8's way of preparing for this natural user interface technology. So if you wanted to, for example, if you wanted to search for the word Romans, you could type in Romans, use this search charm, and not only is it going to search for the word Romans inside of files and folders, but it's also going to search for it through the applications. Now, of course, you have to add this functionality to your application, but where the word Romans would pick up in a variety of applications, such as a newspaper. It would also pick up in something like maybe a cookbook. And there's also a variety of other applications that, you know, this term, you know, would pick up in. So that's baked in. Sharing, you know, we're now moving, you know, to a point, especially in technology, where we share everything. And Facebook and Twitter, you know, is really the two ways that we are sharing all of our content. So, for example, you're inside of a great web page, and you decide, I'd like to share this with the rest of the world. With a share charm, you could share that with Facebook, Twitter. You could also add in email, or you could share that if you had some sort of specific functionality in your application to share, you could share it with that as well. Again, that's something that you would have to put into your application.
Okay, and the other topic, the topic that I think that really has gotten surprisingly little coverage but is going to be of tremendous interest to folks, is the idea of monetizing your application, selling your application in the App Store.
Yeah, so exactly. So with Silverlight, of course, we're typically building line of business applications. When we build these applications, we're selling them to the customer, you know, ourselves, you know, through our company webpage or whatever. Well, with Windows 8, you're basically using the Windows Store, because, you know, who doesn't want to make money? We want to reach as many, you know, folks as we possibly can. So with the Windows Store, of course, this is for your Windows 8 Metro applications. It's already designed for discovery. So, you know, instead of a person going to your website, figuring out who you are, and then, you know, going through a form, filling out a credit card and everything like that, the Windows Store has all of that covered for you. One of the more surprising things is the reach. So there's 231 markets that the Windows Store is going to be available in. They're going to have enterprise options available, and it's the same flexible business model that really we're used to in Windows Phone, being free, paid, or trial. There is a Microsoft Ad SDK out if you decide to do a free application and make your revenue off of ads. I'm actually using that same model for my phone application. I'm planning on doing that for my store application as well. I have played with that Ad SDK. It's in beta. Not only can you use just images in your with your application, but you can also do videos as well. So video ads, you know, they're all over, of course, YouTube. You usually see those after you start a video. The good news here, and this is probably what most of your listeners are waiting for, is registration fee. And the latest that I've heard from Microsoft is the registration fee is $49 for individuals, $99 for companies. So we all know that $99 for companies is basically a team lunch or less. So it doesn't require hardly anything in order to get your app into the store. The good news is that they share up to 80% of the revenue that's generated from the app sales. And of course, that changes a little bit if your application is more successful.